99, proceeded.
Redbird Sports Talk. Interviews and professional sports news all in one place.
Redbird's playing a lot on the outside. Open three for Poindexter. Got it.
The quarterback just couldn't figure out the passing game.
You're listening to Red Zone, only on 103.3 WZND. Blasting off in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome into the Red Zone. I'm Mike Dicarelli alongside Braden Fogerson and Ben Hootie, and we're joined by Zach Anningstead here live in the studio, who didn't like that clip of me saying the quarterbacks in the beginning. I honestly think that was the Bears, I think a couple of years ago. I don't think that was you guys. I'm not just trying to cover my tracks. I don't know, but someone's getting fired for making that as part of our intro. But if you don't know who Zach is, he is, I don't know how you wouldn't, but he's the quarterback of our ISU Redbirds football team, 3-1 in the year, joining us live to start the show in studio. Zach, we appreciate you being here.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
So you obviously have put together a really solid year so far in year number two for the Redbirds. What's kind of been the key thus far?
Yeah, I mean, I think it helps me being in my second year in this offense with Coach Peterson as our OC. I have a lot of guys around me who are in their second year here, and we got a few transfers who have played a key role. We can go on and on about that, but yeah, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the run game's been a huge part of it. I mean, we'll get into your passing game and everything like that as we go on with this interview, but three dynamic guys who can really run the ball, and Blake Moore and Winker's right, and then of course Cole. How has that been really big for you? Is something you can kind of rely on through your offense?
Yeah, I mean, it's been amazing. I mean, makes my job a lot easier when we can run the ball. I think last year we didn't run it efficiently enough. Obviously, I didn't play well enough last year either. Our record shows that. But I think you guys saw it. Josh, a true freshman, stepped up last week too. Winker's right went down. He'll be back soon. But it was awesome to see a guy like Josh step up. I was really proud of him. That running back room is deep right now, and I mean, you got to stay healthy. That's the name of the game. But I've been really impressed with that room for sure.
So what is the difference, do you feel like difference in terms of improvements from last year to this year that kind of make you feel a little bit more confident than how you feel about what your last season went?
Yeah, I mean, I think just being in the film room every day with Coach Peterson, our offensive coordinator, has paid dividends for me. And I think it's small things that you guys probably don't really notice. It's like tying my footwork with my progressions, where my eyes are at pre-snap, what I'm looking at pre-snap. As soon as I get the ball in my hands, what am I looking at? I think everything's happened a lot faster for me this year. Not that things weren't last year, but just being on the same page with Coach Peterson as an offensive staff, I think, has just made a world of a difference for me.
So I have another question, because I have my own personal opinions about it, but you as a quarterback have to know what your decisions are. So when it comes to pass interference, are you just throwing it up and assuming there's at least a 50-50 shot that Cam O'Nelson or something's going to get things to go his way? Or do you, is it a little bit different the way you play like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on the play. I think at times you can take a calculated risk if you want to say that. I think you see in the NFL all the time, you guys are getting pass interference, things like that. But I think there's a calculated risk that goes into that with deep shots, things like that. So I think when I'm throwing the ball, I'm not like, oh, hopefully I get a pass interference here. I'm trying to put in a spot where my receiver can get in, the defender can't. And if the defender wants to commit that foul, then that's great for us.
Or like Sobkowitz is down there somewhere.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
He's down there somewhere. Amen. Zach, let's talk about you real fast before we get back into football. So from Minnesota to IMG here to ISU, you've had a big journey in football. What is it about football to you that has made you just stick with it? I mean, you're obviously really good at it, but do you love the sport? Do you love just being out there with the guys? What's kind of the bottom line for you?
You know, I do. I think there's days throughout my high school and college career where you wake up in the morning, you're like, you know what, I'd love to not do this. I'd love to just hang out with the guys. The commitment that it takes to keep going is definitely hard. I think it's a piece that people don't really see as much, because when things are going well, they want to do interviews with you, and you guys are doing your job. When things aren't going well, people don't really want to be around you as much. People don't want to do the interviews. You see that all the time.
Yeah.
And just the day-to-day grind does get really hard. But I think it's more so the process and the life lessons you learn through that has been really awesome for me, and things that I'll carry on throughout my whole life.
Got to ask again more about yourself. What's the plan after football? And whether it's continuing to play, or what might it be? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, hopefully I'm lucky enough and I've put good enough things on tape to get a chance at the next level. And whatever happens to that, I'll be at peace with it. I know I've given everything I can, will for Illinois State the rest of the season. And then after that, honestly, I'm not sure if I want to stay in sports, whether that's coaching, some administration, or hit the business world. Honestly, I'm not 100% sure. So I guess I'll just kind of reevaluate where I'm at here in a couple months and see where it takes me.
We had a question come in on Twitter asking you what your favorite helmet is to wear for the Redbirds. I know the jerseys have kind of been switched up recently over your last 2 years. What's your favorite lid is the question via Twitter.
You know, I think I'm sure people would like me to say some flash. Like, we have that red helmet that I think is cool. But the white helmet I think is cool because Coach Spack, we do little Redbirds. Like, if you guys have seen, right, little Redbird stickers on the side, not the big one, but the little ones. And those come from guys playing well, doing certain things in the field, hitting certain goals. And it's cool to see other guys on the team kind of stack up those accomplishments throughout the season. So I like wearing those because it kind of has that vibe to it.
Absolutely.
So your cousin Sam Decker. Yeah. So have you met him? Do you like know him well or anything, or like are you not really that close?
You know, I don't keep in touch with him all the time, but I've definitely talked to him a handful of times. I've met him. I've had dinners with him and his family before. It was really cool to see what he accomplished at Wisconsin. And I believe he's over in Europe right now still playing. He had a little bit of a stint there in the NBA. He's been back and forth. But it's been really cool to see what he's accomplished and someone who I look up to for sure.
Let's talk about Coach. You mentioned the stickers in the helmet. You seem to have a smile on your face when you mentioned Coach. We talked to him just last spring in our live show at Buffalo Wild Wings, and we were really excited about how just down to earth he seemed. Just a dude, you know, somebody you want to be your neighbor. Do you get that same vibe from Coach? I mean, I'm sure he's a lot more intense in practice, but he seems like a heck of a guy.
No, 100%. I mean, he was a huge reason as to why I came here. Everything that he told me recruiting has been true. I mean, I couldn't say enough good about the guy. Even just outside of football, I think he's a great person, great human being. And I think that's something that's not easy to find in college football. I think at the end of the day, a lot of it is a business. You got to perform on the field. But I truly do believe that Coach Spack cares about people outside of football. Whether you throw for a million touchdowns or zero touchdowns or whatever that looks like. And he's someone who has been one of my favorite coaches throughout my time, and definitely someone who I'll keep in touch with on a regular basis as soon as I leave here.
What is it about ISU? You know, you kind of mentioned Coach Spack there, but what else about ISU was kind of why you sought after it originally, you know, last year, and what keeps you here now 2 years into your Redbird career?
Yeah, you know, I think I had a handful of different opportunities. I was lucky enough when I entered the transfer portal to have a handful of different opportunities and had a lot of good conversations about it. I don't know, something felt special about it, and I know the ultimate goal was to have a chance, give myself a chance to play in the NFL, and I knew if I came here and put good things on tape, that'll be the case. Whether, like I said, whether I throw for 40 touchdowns a season or whether I throw for whatever it is, I'm not as worried about the production and things like that. It's more so, can I put good things on tape and put us in the best situations to win?
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about NIL. We talked about this before that the mics were going. I'd mentioned I see you in commercials for, you know, car dealerships and all the sorts. You don't have to talk about your partnerships. I know there's rules with that, but just in general, how cool is that? Because you've been in college sports for a number of years, but it's kind of in the middle of your college career that became legal, and you've seen your teammates engage in it. I talked to Wankers last year a bit about that whole thing, and a number of people. Has it been cool to kind of see that progression during your college career?
Yeah, no, I think it's really cool. I think there's a lot of different opinions out there about it. At times I think it's awesome. At times I think there's problems with it.
Yeah.
The coolest thing for me right now, I think about it, is that I want to be able to pave the way for next guys to come through, whether that's football or not or whatever sport it is. So I'm kind of trying to push the limits with some things. Obviously within it being legal. But I'm definitely trying to push some limits, create opportunities for guys in the future, and kind of just let guys know here at Illinois State, whether it's guys or girls, that they can do those things with whatever companies in town they want or big name companies.
You talked about the impact of some new guys. You started off the interview with that, and we said we'd get to that in a little bit. So how important has that been? Is it a totally new look on your offense, you think, or is it just kind of supplementing what already was a solid group?
Yeah, you know, I think last year, coming in this year, we lost a few guys who were good players. A few of those guys got some NFL opportunities. But just on offense, we had Mason Blakemore. We had a few freshmen. Cam Grandy's a tight end, has been really productive for us. One of my really good friends. Who else have we had on offense? We had Ishaan Stewart, a receiver. And I'm sure we've added a few offensive linemen who you guys haven't seen to play a lot yet, but I think they will as we go on this year and next year as well. So I think we've been really lucky to hit on some good players there for sure in the transfer portal.
So the offense is one thing, but ISU's kind of always been known for the defensive side of the ball. When you're sitting on the sidelines and you're not playing, how stressful is it to kind of either watch or just kind of like, you know, cower and, you know, not want to watch it? What's it like when you're not on the field and having to see your teammates try and play for you, you know?
No, I think Coach Niekamp, our defensive coordinator, does a great job preparing the guys during the week. I mean, they give a lot of different looks during practice that makes it hard for me and our offense, but it's good because I think that makes our games easier. But, no, I have a lot of trust in our defense, a lot of faith in our defense. And Coach Back talks a lot about playing complementary football. There's things on offense we can do to help the defense. There's things that the defense does, getting turnovers, this and that, to help us get in good positions. So there's never a time where I'm sitting. I mean, obviously I want to win the game, so I'm cheering for our guys. But there's never a moment where I'm like, oh, crap, like, holy moly. Our defense does a really good job, and our coaches do a great job of preparing them. And I know they will for the rest of the season.
Do you get to face scout team a lot during practice, or is it more like trying to go up against the best on defense versus the best on offense?
Yeah, you know, we do a mixture of good on good, half of practice. I mean, we have a lot of individual periods where we're working on just individual skills. And then we have a lot of good on good periods, which just means ones versus ones, twos versus twos. So that's a great opportunity to go against our defense. And then we have a few scout team periods where whoever we're playing that week, we'll focus on them.
Bye week this week must feel nice.
Yeah, it was never a bad time for a bye week.
But obviously coming up, you got a couple of highly ranked opponents in the tracks. How do you kind of turn off the noise from them being one of the better teams in the FCS and prepare for them?
I mean, I think anytime you get the number one team in the country in FCS to come into your house, I think that's a great opportunity. It's a great opportunity for our guys to show what they can do and as a team what we can do. And I think guys are excited. I think you get a lot of people around like, oh, just give it your best shot when you taste a team like that. But I mean, we got a lot of guys who are super excited for this. And it's just like any other game. Any team in our conference, if you don't show up, we lost Eastern Illinois. I think they're a great football team. But our minds, there's no shot we should have lost that game. So I think any given Saturday in college football, anything can happen for sure.
I like that mentality because you guys were close in that game, obviously, and it's a 3-1 start. It's nothing to scoff at. It's an impressive start. And like you said, South Dakota State coming in after the bye week, the national champs, and then Indiana State, both games at home. There's a good schedule coming up, but I think you guys will benefit from being at home. That's for sure. I mean, the stat when I called the game last weekend was, in general, the team is, I think, 63 and like 14 or something. I'm just making that up, but it was something just like that at home over the last 10 years. Like, I think the Redbird fans do a solid job of showing out for an FCS program and for an MBFC program.
No, I think being at home means the world to us. I think it's awesome. I think it's really, sometimes it goes unappreciated of how much our students being at the game mean to us. Like when we come out on the field and we see a packed house, I mean, it's a really cool opportunity for us. Whether people admit it or not, it's not about external motivators, but I mean, when you run on the field and you have a full crowd there behind you, it means a lot and it's really fun. Makes it a special environment.
That's awesome to hear.
You excited for the night game? 6 p.m. start for South Dakota State.
I am very excited. I love a good night game. You sit around all day, so it gets a little anxious and I'm sitting around all day, but I think it'll be really cool. I think hopefully we'll get the stadium rocking. We'll be wearing some black jerseys. I think it'll be cool.
So I've heard from football players especially, it's funny you bring that up because the nerves before a football game or the anxiety before a football game is no joke, it sounds like. I mean, how do you deal with that in the locker room? Are you listening to a certain type of music? Are you just kind of, you know, locking in by yourself or talking? What does it look like for you?
Yeah, I mean, I try to approach it kind of like similar to a practice. I think just kind of having like a routine. I don't get super anxious. I think it's more so like when I wake up in the morning, it's like, oh, crap, we got a game today. Let's go.
Right.
I think it's more so like that. And I think as we get close to the game throughout the week, I just kept building confidence in practice. So I think it's more so just kind of my confidence is building as we get closer to the game. But I mean, guys, I mean, there's definitely guys, whether it's on our team or other teams, get anxious before a football game. I mean, it's an intense game. There's a lot of mental strain that goes into that for sure.
It's good to hear from QB1. Real quick, before we wrap up the segment and wrap up our interview, anyone you want to give a shout out to while you got a mic here in front of you?
Shout out to you guys.
Oh, Zach. Thank you. We appreciate it. You've been awesome this year. Full transparency. We've appreciated calling the games and hope it really keeps going. You and the team have been a treat so far this year. So with two home games to go, I know Ben here is going to be on the call against South Dakota State. So give him something good to yell about in the booth.
Perfect. Love it. Can't
but wait. Thanks, Zach, for being here. We appreciate it. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about some big news in the world of sports. You're listening to The Red Zone. Welcome to The Red Zone. Mikey Fennelli, Braden Fogerson, Ben Hoodie. I'm so mad that the open sounder made Zach think that that you're talking about quarterback woes. I honestly don't think that's what that's from. I think it's from a Bears clip. I remember when the new open was put together, I thought maybe we shouldn't have that one in there, but we'll leave it in there now as the inside joke. He took it well.
Yeah.
He's awesome. I really enjoyed having him on. Such a down-to-earth guy. I see why Coach likes him, because he reminded me a lot of Coach Spack when we talked to him. So there's something to be said about that quarterback, and I really hope it's a good rest of the year, because he's really cool. And from the way I don't think he's officially said so, but I think this is his last year, so just based on his eligibility. Let's move on to Rounding the Bases. It's a new segment we want to put together today. We wanted to bring this in because our Redbird segment was Zach's interview to start the show. So now, before we get into football, we want to round the bases on a few different things that happened in the world of sports. Each of us kind of prepared a 5 or so minute sports talk thing we want to talk about with little check-ins from the other guys. I'll lead with Benjamin Hootie, who wants to talk about the trade that shook the basketball world.
Yeah, unexpected to say the least. If you missed it yesterday, Portland Trail Blazers, probably one of the greatest Portland Trail Blazers of all time, Damian Lillard.
Yeah, the greatest Trail Blazer
of all time. Damian Lillard is on his way to Milwaukee, to the Bucks, in a blockbuster three-team trade that includes Portland and Phoenix. So DeAndre Ayton's on his way to Portland, and Drew Holiday, I think, is on his way to Portland as well, and then a couple other incentives as well. But, man, it's crazy to think that after all these years of Damian Lillard wanting to build a true contender in Portland and a couple Western Conference Finals appearances, could never get to the championship and try and compete for one there, but it's finally all over, and Damian Lillard is going to team up with Giannis Antetokounmpo and Chris Middleton and try and compete for a championship in the East.
So I don't know if you guys know, because I'm not into the NBA, so like I can't really consider myself like a true fan or anything, but my favorite team in the NBA has been the Portland Trailblazers.
New
so
Brandon Lore unlocked. Yeah. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, exactly. Because like I'm not really in the NBA. I'm more into college basketball right now as well. My brother, it's his favorite sport, but I am not that big into it. But when I am, I'm into Portland. It's just that Lillard has been such an amazing player. And I said he's the greatest because I feel like sometimes people have like a reverse recency bias where they're like, there's no way he's better than some of the players from the 70s just because he's more recent. But like he can score 40 like that. Like, it's not that easy to do. And just because it happened recently doesn't make him, you know, not qualify as the best player to do it.
Trailblazers, Cardinals, and Raiders. Are you a Blues fan for hockey? Is there any consistency?
If I am a Blues fan for hockey, but again, I'm not really into hockey. So, like, you know, the whole, like, name three players. Like, yeah. I would fail some of those quizzes when it comes to hockey. At so I can't really call myself a Blues fan, but I did buy a Blues championship shirt to
Blues are really cool colors. They have cool jerseys. I'll say that. Rounding first, heading to second, Brayden's news story is about Sportsmageddon on Sunday.
Yes. Yeah, so we have the Ryder Cup, which I am told is golf.
It's like the biggest, it's one of the coolest golf events of a biannual schedule, but yes.
We have the Ryder Cup in the morning, and then we have NASCAR from Talladega in the afternoon, and then Sunday Night Football in the evening. Not going to promote the channel because it's not like they're our sponsor or anything, but I will say it's all on one channel, so you don't even have to change the channel. You are just stuck on some of the best sports that you could ask for in one day.
I love sports. All I can say. And did you include in there all Major League Baseball ends that day too?
Exactly.
So we could have a really, really impressive race to the finish here, as there's about four teams up for an NL wild card. And we talked about it last week as well, about three teams facing for one division, and
Padres gonna do it. They got it going.
Come on. About the Ryder Cup, though, I'm excited for the Ryder Cup. I mean, the U.S. team looks good. Sam Burns, Pat Cantlay, Wyndham Clark, who won a major this year. Of course, Ricky Fowler, who has always been good. Justin Thomas, who shouldn't be there and should be subbed out by Bryson DeChambeau. That's a different story. Brooks Koepka, Justin Thomas, who I mentioned. Jordan Spieth, Scottie Scheffler, could do everything but putt. They're going to be really good, I think. But that European team is really, really good, too. Rory McIlroy, a number of players who have had really solid years. Ian Poulter, players who have been there before and definitely have the veteran status. I'm forgetting somebody. Oh, Victor Hovland, who won the PGA last year. Mm. Just a number of really good players. I know neither of you guys are huge golf guys, but they're They got a solid team, and the Tommy U.S. Fleetwood. Is the reigning champ. Yeah, Tommy Fleetwood, Tyrell Hatton, Shane Lowry, just a number of great players. John Rahm, who won the Masters just a year or two ago.
I'm forgetting how good the amount of golfers that are like top tier are. Like, yeah. There's so many of them that I know off the top of my head that I know are really good that I've seen play well. I mean, I only really watch the Masters every year,
and like the people I just
still
know
how well they did from that. Like, you are going to have a whole lot of talent on one course.
I will say there's like a couple of LIV players on the European team, and there's only one on the U.S. team, and Brooks Koepka. I think Bryson DeChambeau deserved it too. That's my take. I don't care what you think about LIV and PGA. Every opinion is valid. Just it should truly be the best U.S. golfers versus the best European golfers. Yeah. We shouldn't segment it out due to
punishment
for anything like that. I mean, it's a whole thing. We're not going to get into it, but I think Bryson DeChambeau deserved to be there after winning two tournaments this year and a 58 in 18 holes, which is incredible.
I will say one other thing. If you are also up for the Ryder Cup, you could have your second TV on at 7 a.m. Toy Story broadcast. They are in London.
What?
Jacksonville Jaguars.
Have you not heard of
it? It's a Toy Story broadcast.
Why is it Toy Story?
I don't know. Like ESPN owns the rights to the game, and they're only doing it on ESPN Plus or Disney Plus.
I think it's their answer. Sorry to cut you off, but it's their answer to the Nickelodeon
thing. Yeah,
like
yeah.
It's like, you know, in the playoffs the last MVP. Couple years, they've had the MVP and the slime cast
what
and all that. Yeah,
MVP.
The MVP. It's on his football
and
reference.
He lost.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. That's what they get for making it be a fan vote.
it was the greatest thing of all time.
Yeah,
like that was the worst game I've ever had to sit through in my life. But
did
it was
you
so
watch the Nickelodeon version of that
broadcast? We went back and forth.
Yes, I had COVID, and I knew the Bears would lose. And I'm like, if I'm going to watch the Bears lose, I'll watch it and have fun with it. And
it got slimed.
And it got slimed. And then what's-his-face almost dropped the catch in the end zone, a dart pass from Trubisky that was just thrown like 80 yards downfield, went off his hands, and the Bears scored. I thought it was Amos. No, maybe it wasn't. It was whoever it was, dropped it in the end zone, and then the slime cannons went off, but it was no touchdown.
Hot take, award shows are dying in terms of people watching them. If the Emmys, if you win an Emmy and you get slimed, like, I
would
watch
nice.
That. Yeah.
And Jimmy Graham's walk-off touchdown, too.
Yes, it just literally ran out the tunnel. That was such a meme game.
Nickelodeon broadcast, it was like, the game, it was a meaningless touchdown, and Jimmy Graham catches it, walks off the field, and all of a sudden the slime cannons are going off.
Well, the funniest part of that, too, is that Josh Allen said that in Mitch's lone year with the Bills, he had his MVP blimp trophy sitting in his locker and would regularly like clean it and like make sure it was facing the way where people could see it.
No,
this is true. You could look it up. It was an interview on Pardon My Take with Josh Allen, and he was talking about how Mitch Trubisky was flexing his MVP blimp trophy in his locker.
Anti-MVP propaganda.
Yeah, I think it's just because Mitch is just, like,
he's a goofball.
He's a funny guy. Yeah.
He's a very modest guy, but he's also kind of a goofball. I think he'd be really funny. All right, fine. Rounding towards third. My sports story. I want to hear you guys' feedback. First and foremost, I'll say it just like my color man for the Cubs, Jim DeChase, said it. Incredible accomplishment to get 40 home runs and 70 steals in the season, as Ronald Acuna has done. 70 steals was accomplished last night against the Cubs in the 10th inning of a 5-5 thriller in which the Cubs needed to win to continue their playoff hopes. I mean, they're still in even with the loss, but they definitely needed a win. And the Braves have already won 101 games, 102 after last night. Acuna steals second amid the 10th inning, one out, with a Cubs young pitcher on the mound. And after stealing second, in a Ricky Henderson style, rips the bag out of the dirt, holds it over his head like he just broke the all-time steal record, and then stops the game for 3 minutes while they replace the bag, which is fine that he wants to keep the bag. I don't think he should have ripped it out. Could have gotten it after the inning, but whatever. It's his accomplishment. He can do what he wants. The Braves stopped the game for 3 minutes in the bottom of the 10th in a 5-5 game to show a highlight video of all the steals he had that year.
Mm-hmm.
And so the announcers for the Cubs on Marquee obviously are a little upset. I agree with them.
No, it changes momentum.
Yeah.
I will agree. Because you remember the World Series,
yes.
The Cubs. The Cubs had no momentum because they just gave up a huge home run.
And then
all of a sudden you get a rain delay and that shifts everything. Momentum is a really, really big deal in baseball.
Especially with a young pitcher. So what I'll let you go in 1 second, Ben, because I know you agree with me on this one a little bit. What Boog and JD said in the moment was that I'm paraphrasing, but basically they were both a little bit flabbergasted, which they never get upset about stuff like that. They were both a little bit flabbergasted and said, why are we stopping the game here for this incredible accomplishment? Being very respectful, but just saying, great accomplishment, but whatever. Boog went on the New York Post today and said, why are people making such a big deal out of it? They're looking at a 30-second clip when it was 3 minutes of silence while there was a highlight package going on. These guys never do stuff like that during the broadcast. They've both been doing it for two, three decades, and it was what Boog literally said was, it's 5-5 in the 10th. I don't think we should have had a highlight montage in that spot. That's all he said. It's just ridiculous.
You said it perfectly. Everyone on social media is seeing the 30-second clip of what Jim and Boogs decided to say, which is I 100% agree with them. But no one realizes besides maybe Braves and Cubs fans, I don't think people realize the extent of how long this truly went. And this young Cubs pitcher, Daniel Palencia, who's just got thrown into the fire against the top of the Braves order, he has to sit there for 3 minutes and just he didn't even warm up. I don't know if that was necessary. I don't know if that was on him or what, if he could have or if it was disrespectful. I really don't know. Once again, Ronald Acuña is having one of the greatest seasons we've ever seen in baseball history. I'm not discrediting that. But the Cubs, they've been done for weeks. They are locked in. They're the number one seed in the National League. They're good. They're perfectly fine. The Cubs are fighting for their lives, and we decide to take 3 minutes and just sit there and watch Ronald Acuña lift the bag up and get a standing ovation from the Braves crowd. It's annoying to me. It was frustrating in the moment, and sure enough, on the next pitch that they ended up throwing, it was a walk-off single.
Boog said, it's an unfortunate example of what social media does. It's like a 25-second clip, and then everybody has to take on how much I care or JD cares, meaning Jim DeSantis, the color announcer, or how salty we were, how much it bothers us. Nobody else gets to say how much I care other than me. You don't get to tell me how much I care, and I'm telling you, I don't really care. But the game was going on, and that's what I thought. They shouldn't have run the highlight montage. I just finished my salad from Sweetgreen. We're fine. Let's go, Cubs. Go win tonight. That was Boog's quote. I love the ending of that. Cubs in four, by the way. But it's just amazing that he's like, why? Who cares how much I care? Like, he's ultimately a guy. He has a mic on. He's allowed to say what he wants. He's a person, is what I'm trying to get at. He wasn't being disrespectful about it. He's like, hey, it's the 10th inning. What? Great accomplishment. He said in the moment, and that's 70 for Acuña. He's the away team's broadcast, and he still noted the moment. But we shouldn't do a three-minute highlight reel in the moment.
Well, context is a big deal. And on Twitter and sites like that, there's so many people, so many, like, even well-respected sites. Like, I love John Boy Media, but they do this a lot. People that you get one person that knows all the context of the story and sends the video and then says it. And then every other, you know, Fox Sports MLB and, you know, Baseballism and every other Twitter account will send that video and try and put their own spin on it, but they lose all the context, and then that's when everyone freaks out. That's just part of the problem in the scenario as well, I would say.
Sorry, Ben Verlander, I don't care what you think about my announcer. Like, I don't. I could get off Twitter, please. Your brother's making you famous. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know.
My best friend beat him in the show one time, by
Ooh,
the way.
Ben Verlander?
Yeah.
Really?
My best friend in high school, I was playing the show with him one night, and he ended up facing Ben Verlander, and he was live streaming, and he beat him. That's all I know about Ben Verlander.
Comes up 1-0 in the Braves right now. Ian Happ, new fielder's choice.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think it was taken out of context, and the guys are getting ripped too hard for trying to be baseball homers. And you know what? I'm just going to say it. I know no Atlanta Braves fans are listening. You guys are weird. That's all I'm going to say.
We'll be right back on the Red Zone. Welcome back to the Red Zone. Right as Ben returns from his bathroom break, we are ready for segment number 3 here on the podcast. I'm just embarrassed him by saying that, but that's all right. Julian Boss joins the show live from our studio. Good, Julian, how are you?
Pretty good.
Good. If you don't know Julian, I don't know how you don't. He's a regular on the show, but he is one of our more experienced broadcasters here at WZND, and we're welcome to have him on for the second half an hour where we talk about football, as we have done for the last few weeks. And we'll start it off here. Waste no time as we get into our football roundup from week 3. Braden himself told me during the commercial break we don't have to dwell on Thursday night football as always. Yeah, 30-12, the 49ers rolled the New York Giants. I think the Giants actually did better than I thought. If anyone had plus 20 or something, like an ultimate threat, 19.5, they would have covered. Like the Giants scored 12 points. They had no line and they had no Saquon Barkley. I think they did okay. Let's move on to the Falcons and the Lions. Steve was happy. The Falcons, kind of lightning in the bottle, early magic has kind of run out. They lost to the Lions 20-6. Anyone have anything to say about the Detroit Lions and their bounce back victory?
They're good.
Yeah, I think they're a good team, and we're going to see more of them tonight. And yeah, I think we'll preview more of them later.
Chargers and the Vikings. A real slugger battle over there. Chargers win that one 28-24 for their first win. Leave the Vikings 0-3. Zach Anikstead told us before we turned the mics on, he's a Vikings fan. We didn't really have time to get into that during the podcast earlier, but he might not be happy because his Vikings have fallen to now 0-3. Julian, I'll bring you in for the first time on this one. What'd you see in that one between two high-powered offenses?
Yeah, it seemed like the Vikings' defense has taken like kind of a toll since last year. Obviously, their offense could put up points. It seems like pretty obvious with Addison and obviously Justin Jefferson, but I think the Vikings will figure it out this season. But if not, I could also see them trying to move on from Kirk Cousins in the next season too. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
I think it's a week-by-week thing with them.
One of the scrappiest teams in the NFL, and the Green Bay Packers, gets a one-point victory over Derek Carr and the New Orleans Saints. I refer to Braden Fogerson, our resident Derek Carr expert, to tell me, is it more of the Saints truly not being that good, or the Packers just find ways to win?
I think, well, first of all, this was one of the toughest games to pick a week ago in pick six, and I think we were pretty split on it, and for good reason, because these teams were very similar in terms of their abilities, and I think that's what we got. We got a very even matchup. It's a one-point game. I didn't really get to watch very much of it, but Jordan Love doing pretty solid right now. Nothing amazing, but doing solid.
Who can stop Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars other than Patrick Mahomes? Apparently C.J. Stroud
and
the Houston
Steve
Texans.
Cease putting them in his parlay.
In his parlay. So we'll take a break here for a second to tell you that. Steve does his pick six every week, and then we report it live on the show. He's perfect in the last 2 weeks, 12-0, and he put his six picks from pick six in a parlay last week and also tagged on the Jaguars over the Texans at the end for an extra boost, and then that was the only one that didn't hit. So let's talk about that. 20-point victory for C.J. Stroud and the Houston Texans. Ben, you're waggling a finger. You got something to say about this one. I think I'm gonna push this one towards you.
Yeah, I like what I've seen on C.J. Stroud so far. He's had a couple 300-yard perform or 280 here, but I think he threw for 300 yards in his first NFL game. So I think, you know, the Houston Texans did not come into the season with much expectation, but that C.J. Stroud-Tank Dell connection is definitely something that's positive to look for in the future. And they got, what's his name on defense, too, that they drafted?
Will Anderson?
Yes, thank you. Will Anderson. I was drawing a blank there. So I think they're building towards something really great, and obviously upsetting the Jaguars is pretty impressive as well.
People wanted to hate on Tank Dell for being short. I think that's about over. He is a wide receiver, too, at least, but possibly even arguably a wide receiver one.
Bonus game. We're not picking this in pick six, but I just want to genuinely hear everyone's first instinct. Steelers and Texans. I'm going Texans.
I'm going Texans. I like the Steelers this year.
I like Pittsburgh just because they're defense.
I like Pittsburgh.
It doesn't count for pick six. I wish it did because now I'd be the only one. So I'm thinking Texans in that one. I liked what I saw last week, and the Steelers did not look good in that win against the Raiders. We'll move on to the Broncos and the Dolphins. My Lord. The Dolphins are insane. That's one thing. 70 points. But, man, it sets up for a fun game between the Broncos and Bears this week. But that we'll get onto that in pick six. But what do we think about this Dolphins team? I don't know. Does anyone want to step up and tell me? Because I'm lost. I knew they'd be good. But is McDaniels just the next Belichick? Is Tua the next Tom Brady?
So they're going into their game against the Bills this week. If they cannot use the momentum from this one to take down the Bills, I don't know if they ever can, is what I will say.
Mm. It's the same start that they had last year, 3-0, and then I wouldn't say the wheels necessarily fell off because they still managed to make the playoffs, but I think it wasn't it week four that the Tua injury ended up happening against Cincinnati
on Thursday night.
So, Tua looks really good. I know he said that this is the most fun he's had playing football since his senior year at Alabama, so that's good things to hear. That connection with Tyreek Hill works, and I think they're a really good football team, and repeating everything Braden said, this is a big one for them.
See if the common denominator between those 2 years is the championship. Browns and Titans, 27-3, a quiet blowout for Cleveland. The Titans found a nice win the week before. Something went wrong this week against Cleveland.
Yeah, I feel like the Titans need to find a different change at quarterback at this point. It seems like Tannehill's really been having a down year now. Derrick Henry, he seems like he's slowing down a little bit too. So like, I can see them having like a selling type of year. But the Browns also look really, really good right now. I'm liking what I see from them. Deshaun Watson is playing pretty good again. And I like what I see from Amari Cooper, too. He seems like he's getting back in his own also.
Bills and Commanders sets up for a great shootout between the Dolphins and Bills this week. The Bills quietly stomping a few opponents since that week one shocking loss. 37-3 was the total for the Bills and Commanders. Josh Allen and the Bills offense have kind of squashed those rumors they start every year with that Stephon Diggs is not happy and they're not happy at all as a team and they can't win. They've gotten into a little bit of a train moving moment for them.
But now they go into this week and have a tough opponent. But looking into this one, I mean, that's exactly what you expected. Bills looking really, really good. It's just this is not the week that you can really judge them on.
Despite Gardner Minshew pulling a Dan Orlovsky and finding the back of the end zone, the Colts beat the Ravens 22-19. Is it panic time for Baltimore, for a team that was so close to a championship a number of years ago? Are they losing it? Are the wheels falling off, Ben? You shake your head.
No.
No?
I think this is just one of those fluke weeks. It was a bad weather, gross game. Colts ended up.
He said it.
Bad weather.
I don't know what that means.
No.
Oh yeah, we were talking about that week one. Yeah.
You thought you said something wrong. No, it was week one when Braden would say games didn't matter if it was raining. It didn't count. Oh,
I
man.
Somewhat implied
maybe
that.
Maybe it kind of is the Texans thing. Maybe the Colts are better than we thought.
It may be. I mean, I would like to see what would happen if Anthony Richardson was healthy. I think he's
playing this week.
He is playing this week. Okay. I'm glad that his injury is over. Patriots and Jets. The Patriots got their win. Like we've said all year, they're a bit frisky. Ben just yelled, I'm assuming the Cubs are up. What's the score over there?
2-1.
Let's
Braves.
Go.
Thank God.
Braves. Oh, 2-1 Braves? No. Oh, yes. Man.
No.
Oh, 2-run home run for Matt Olson.
Oh, no. I'm so sad about that.
All right, Patriots and Jets. Braden, will we all mourn that? Why don't you tell us about the Patriots getting their first win?
They finally started rolling, but the Jets, I mean, Zach Wilson is not a real quarterback, so like, really doesn't mean much. I don't know. Mac Jones is nothing special, and I think that it's time to accept that.
What Steve called the sea chickens, 37-27 versus the Panthers. The Sharks get a nice win. Ever since losing to the Rams week one, they have really found a way to be a high-powered offense, and Geno Smith continues to not write back as he quests for the NFC playoffs.
Kaylee Sugimoto wears the Seahawks slippers everywhere, and it's like there's some magic in these things. Like, the Seahawks have really good offense this year. There's something about the Pacific Northwest.
Bears and Chiefs. Ben, do you have a pun ready this time?
Bears and Chiefs. Nah, not for
we
this.
We gotta save
not
them for Colleen.
Yeah.
We gotta save
yeah,
them for Colleen.
No, the Chiefs are on pick six. So.
Oh, yeah, you have your puns ready for that. Okay. Yeah, well, but... The game
we don't
that
have to talk about it.
The game that everyone in America had on, not because of the Chiefs, not because of the Bears, but because the last scene of the Bears 30 for 30 of what was a terrible week in Bearstown will be that everyone in America watched their game because Taylor Swift happened to be there. And that was kind of the bottom line. Julian, I know you're a Bears fan. Did you watch that one?
Yeah, all I could really say is just disappointment from that game.
Mm-hmm. I watched it, sadly. I stopped watching it about halftime, and it's just a shame, and I think Taylor Swift was showing up in the skybox more than the Bears' offense was showing on the field, but that's probably the Bears' fault. Cardinals, Cowboys. The Cardinals! Shocking! The Cowboys.
They're kind of good.
28-16. They had the fire in their belly. They took the bus.
They got moving. That guy's the worst. I think they have like a fine offense. It's like Josh Dobbs and James Conner are doing everything in their power right now to just try and carry that team to wins. Because, I mean, they played in 3 close games now, I think. So, you know what? Maybe they do got a little bit of fire in their belly.
Fire in their belly.
Maybe they're an underrated team. Let's see what happens. It's like Colts, Cardinals, Texans. It's like all these weird teams winning this
keep
week.
Making. They all need to keep having the fire in their belly because I want Caleb Williams. I want that number one pick. We're already in tank mode. They just keep the fire in your belly. Cardinals, keep moving. We do not want you to get the number one pick. Maybe Jonathan Gannon has it right. Maybe he knew. Steelers, Raiders, like I talked about. I was unimpressed by that game. I think the Steelers would have lost like to like 30 other opponents, but Garoppolo threw three picks. Your boy Jimmy is just – he might have to go deflect it to Tom Brady already and tell him to come out of retirement.
May I please say I told you so at the start of this year.
Yeah,
that
you
Jimmy
can.
Garoppolo is not it. And just like the Raiders Jimmy. Have been, even during the last couple of years of Derek Carr, like their first few drives are really, really nice. And then they run out of good ideas and just start throwing terrible stuff. And they start turning it over. The Raiders kind of tried to claw back toward the end, but ultimately the tank remains successful.
Can we start the conversation about firing McDaniels? Like, what was that decision? Do you agree with the decision?
I don't know if they can afford to fire him is the problem. I feel like they would have fired him a while ago.
Because he's on such a big contract, correct?
Yeah, and at the very least, you can continue your tank by just losing.
You know what decision I'm talking about, right? Deciding to kick a field goal.
Yeah.
That was awful. Yeah. That was
Matt LaFleur playbook.
I just don't understand how this dude has just tries to be so big brain and gets it wrong every time.
Yeah.
And I don't get how the Patriots were ever good under this dude.
We don't got to spend much time on this guy, but
the owner of the Raiders was the reason why the Patriots were good back when. I could have been a good offensive coordinator for that guy. That's why they were good, because the guy who's up in the owner's box now for the Raiders used to be a decent quarterback. I don't know how the Patriots were good. They haven't had the greatest player ever. I gave you a death stare. You know why?
Not only is the coach bad on that team, but some defensive players are also doing some other things, too, on their own free time.
Yeah, no. McDaniels couldn't coach that offense through Raiders. A cardboard box. So.
Raiders.
The Super Bowl is in Las Vegas this year.
Super Raiders.
The Raiders.
The what game?
The championship is in Las Vegas this year. Yeah. Eagles, Buccaneers, 25-11, the first of two Monday night games. Thank you that there's no more two Monday night games. I don't like that. I want to just watch one game on a Monday. I don't care how mid it is. Like, Sundays when I try and watch more than one game at once. Julian, did you watch this one?
Yeah. Pretty much I saw what I thought the Eagles were. Pretty dominant team on both sides. But also, I thought Baker Mayfield has had a pretty good season so far. He kind of has had an off game against a pretty good defense. So I think the Bucs could end up being pretty good this year, all in all.
Yeah, Baker's done a solid job. And I think we talked about it last week on the pod. I think maybe with a year under their belt of making the playoffs with Tom Brady, that young coaching staff without Bruce Arians now is kind of fighting in their own with a young quarterback in Baker Mayfield, who has won in the playoffs before as well. Rams and Bengals. The Bengals squeaked out a win. Burrow did not throw for a passing touchdown. I think I saw a stat that was the first time in his career he got a win without a passing touchdown. They kind of relied on Joe Mixon. Big Mac, Evan McPherson, had a positive doink into the goalpost, and the Bengals came out with a win on Monday night. Ben's hitting his watch. Are we out of time?
I will say real quick, every time that I make a pick six pick based on, I don't think their main quarterback is going to start, so I'm going to pick against them, I've been wrong.
Right, I did the same thing.
Can we change that? Like, because I was going to pick the Bengals if Burrow played.
So you're saying we do a special, like, Sunday night, if you want to change your pick six for Monday, you can?
No.
I was going to say no, either way. Because it's a Thursday night thing. You got to take a risk. And speaking of taking a risk, we take six when we come back here on the Red Zone. Welcome back to the Red Zone, the final segment. Julian stays with us for some pick six. And the first game we have on deck here is tonight's Thursday night football game. The battle of the two teams I hate the most. It reminds me of the night before Easter 2022. I was home. I went home for a baseball game with some friends. It was the Cardinals and Brewers in Milwaukee, and I was miserable. It was a good game to be at. Tonight, watching the Cubs on the big TV, I will also have this battle of my two most fierce rivals muted on the bottom TV. Mm. Lions and Packers. I'm going with, reluctantly, the Lions, mostly because it's like the lesser of two evils in my playbook. We're gonna go clockwise, I guess. Yeah,
I got the shirt on. My favorite player, maybe in the NFL. Give me the Lions. I think it will be a close game, though.
You didn't say who's on your shirt.
Oh, Amon-Ra St. Brown. I think I mentioned it on the.
You did. You did earlier. Ago. Yeah.
I'm a big fantasy football player. Yeah. Amon-Ra fan. Had him all year.
Yeah.
Every year. That's it.
Julian.
Yep. I also got the Lions. I think they're the best team in the division by far right now, and sadly, I know that I hate both the Lions and the Packers, but I think the Lions will squeak through this game.
Steve went with Detroit as well. Who's surprised there? No one. Braden?
Detroit.
Oh, no points are in play. It's a sweep. Now it's pick five. You didn't make it fun, Braden. Oh, we should go over the standings, actually, before we move on to the next game.
Yes, we should.
Do you have it pulled up? Yeah.
We should, Ben.
Oh, it's wrong. Oh, never mind. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me. Steve has three losses to his name. Braden pulled out from the cellar. Yeah, let me see. Thank you, Ben. Steve in first, 14-3. The guest, 9-8. So, Julian, you have big shoes to fill here, above 500. Braden has come up from the cellar to 8-9 after a 5-1 week last week. I'm also 8-9. I went down a little bit. Hudsy to the bottom at 7-10. So none of us are doing absolutely atrocious anymore, but Steve is really pulling away at 14-3 with his pick. So the Detroit Lions are a sweep, only five games in play now to move up or move down in the standings. And we move on to a preview of this year's championship, the Denver Broncos and the Chicago Bears. And I'm going to start out the fun and say that Steve went with the Bears And I'm going with the Broncos, mostly because I made a pact to myself that in order to be better at pick six this year, I just can't pick the Bears anymore. Plus, I'm already in tank mode. And Denver's fought
tank
more.
Bowl.
Yeah, Denver's fought more in games than the Bears have. So I'm going with the Broncos.
I'm going to take I don't know. I'll go with the Broncos. It's Bears are really bad. I don't see anything that, even though the Broncos gave up 70 points last week, I don't see anything positive about the Chicago Bears at all. Worst offense, worst defense in the league. It's that simple.
Yeah, I also got the Broncos. The Bears just suck, I think. But I think the Broncos defense is also going to overpower the Bears also. And Russell Wilson won't want to lose to the Bears in Chicago also. So, yeah, I got the Broncos in that one.
Both teams have really, really, really bad defenses. And slightly better offenses, and I think the Bears' offense is slightly better than the Broncos' offense. I think the Broncos' offense has played a little better so far this year, but that's just from circumstance, and the Broncos have to be feeling miserable after last week.
So who's your pick?
Oh, sorry, I didn't say. I'm picking the Bears.
Yeah. Okay, there we go. So I guess the Bears will win because Braden and Steve had the hottest weeks last week, and they're the only ones that picked the Bears. But, you know, it's how it works. There's a give and a take. Who knows? Maybe you guys will be cold this week. Let's move on to an actual potential preview of the AFC Championship, the Dolphins and the Bills. I think this is going to be an awesome game. Steve went with the Bills. I have not learned my lesson to ride the picks of the person who is 14-3. I'm going with the 70-point team. But I will say they would be record-breaking if they win because teams that have scored over 60 points are 0-7 all-time in their next week, which I saw that.
What?
1-6 against the spread. But we're picking it straight up.
No.
So I'm going with the Dolphins, assuming they'll make history, because I just think the Dolphins, I like them. I've been picking them in my confidence pool all year. But that is crazy. That's a crazy stat. Only six times has someone scored over 70, or seven times over 70, or 60, excuse me, and they are winless in their next game.
That's all I need to hear. I like Buffalo. I think Josh Allen, when he's in a big game, well, for the most part, he turns something on. I like it now. Give me the Bills.
I also have the Bills. I think just because if it was in Miami, I would probably take the Dolphins. But in Buffalo, I like that team a lot. So give me the Bills in that one.
I really, really want to pick the Dolphins. You guys have continuously, as we've gone through the circle, tried to convince me otherwise. But I'm sticking to it and sticking with Mikey and picking the Fins.
The Fins. Let's go. So now we have just a 3-2 for Buffalo there with Steve's pick of Buffalo. Tampa Bay and New Orleans, an interesting game, a scrappy game. Two teams that have had some wins, but mostly just scrappy losses, including last week for both teams. I'm going with the Bucs. I was a Bucs fan in years past when Tom Brady was there. I like what Baker Mayfield's doing this year so far. And like I talked about in the last segment, I think these coaches are kind of coming into their own. And the Derek Carr-led Saints are less impressive so far. I wouldn't call them terrible, but less impressive so far. Ben?
I'm going to go with the Saints. 3-1 start for them, Derek Carr Saints. I like it. I like their defense a lot. I think the Bucs are also scrappy, but I trust Derek Carr throwing the ball to Michael Thomas and Chris Olave a little more.
Yeah, give me the Saints in this one. I think that Chris Olave probably a pretty big game this week, and I feel like it's going to be like a shootout type of game, but I think the Saints are going to win it all in all at the end.
Braden?
Did everyone pick the Saints?
No, I picked the Bucs.
Okay. So, Derek Carr last year went against Baker Mayfield, and Baker revived his career by winning on Thursday Night Football. And I think Derek Carr remembers that. And so I think Derek Carr is going to have just enough left in his tank to beat up on Baker this time.
He's back to picking Derek Carr. He made it out of the cellar, and now he's picking his favorites again. He's being a homer again. That's a one-way ticket back to the cellar. We'll move on to the Chiefs and the Jets. As I was on a lonely island for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, we move on to the Chiefs and the Jets. Man, this might be the game-ending Zach Wilson game, or the career-ending Zach Wilson game. I think the Chiefs are going to absolutely roll them. I see Ben already filling in Chiefs all over the spreadsheet. Would everyone agree with that? Ben, you're obviously going Chiefs.
Yeah, welcome to New York, boys, and goodbye from New York for Zach Wilson. Well, I think we might see Trevor Siemian in this game.
Welcome to New York. That was well placed. I expected you to have some kind of pun. Julian?
Yeah, give me the Chiefs pretty easily. I think the Zach Wilson ride is over also. And yeah, nothing else really stakes up for the Chiefs are going to win this game easily.
Steve went with the Chiefs. Braden Fogerson?
Yeah, I don't like the color green. So I'm just going to go with the Chiefs here.
Pick four. Two games are already a sweep. Seattle and the Giants on Monday Night Football, what Steve called the sea chickens. I'm going with them, too. The Giants completely unimpressive, and the Seattle offense has been really strong.
Yeah, we talked about it at the beginning of the year. I love Seattle's offense. I think Geno's done just enough to continue to lead them to wins. I love their rushing attack with Kenneth Walker. Who knows if Saquon Barkley plays or not, and I think that's a big factor in the Giants being able to win games is their running game. If Saquon Barkley's not around, they can't stay in close games. So, yeah, give me the Seahawks in this one.
Yeah, I'm taking the Seahawks also. I think that their offense is just very overpowered at this point. I think they're also a sleeper team in the league right now. I like what Geno Smith's been doing a lot. DK Metcalf's been playing pretty good, so give me the Seahawks in that matchup.
I just can't bring myself to pick this Giants team yet. I feel like they might surprise a little bit, but not much, and the Seahawks have too good of an offense for the Giants to stop that. So
we actually wrap Pick Six a little bit early. That's unusual. We never do. Let's go over a couple random games here in the last 5 minutes. We talked about Texans and Steelers already in the last segment. Do you think the 49ers will crush any Cardinals woes? Or do you think the Cardinals will play spoiler again against another good team?
Wait, what's the matchup?
Cardinals and 49ers.
Oh, no. Well, see, I feel like it'd be fun to pick because the Cardinals have kind of done well. But the Niners are just too good for me to feel that way. The Cardinals historically have outperformed themselves, what their expectations were every time they faced the Niners, but they're not going to win it.
Do the Cowboys bounce back against New England?
I think it'll be a tough game for them, but I do think they bounce back. I think from what I've seen in the Cowboys the first 2 weeks of the season, not counting last week, I think they're a really great football team.
Is that game of the week?
What's up?
Is that America's game of the week? Sorry.
Probably is. No, I don't know, because I've heard that. Oh, wait, no. Never mind. That's probably America's game of the week. You're right. I was thinking of the Bears-Broncos, because this is just a random sub note. 90% of the country is getting Bears-Broncos at noon.
Well, did you hear that last week they turned off the Bears game in a couple markets?
Yeah.
At halftime they swapped it with like a different game, which is funny because I think a lot of people would have still liked to watch it because of the Taylor Swift nonsense. So there was like a lot of people were tuning in just for that. You hear Travis Kelce jersey sales are up like
400%.
Yeah, 400%. Insane.
The Chiefs were already insufferable. Like, come on. Like, do we really need an army of people that love this one woman? Like, bless their hearts, because I appreciate Swifties, but like, I can't have any more Chiefs fans to deal with in my life.
All right, 3-1 Braves right now. We're getting back into baseball because we have a couple extra minutes. I don't know what to do when we have some extra minutes at the end of the red zone. I'm usually way better at managing the clock. Ben told me to wrap up the roundup segment early because we were running out of time, and now we're early on Pick Six. So I blame you.
Let Julian talk.
All right, Julian, you tell us.
What do you think about the Cubs right now?
I don't like what I'm seeing right now at all. I'm not gonna lie. I think
3-1 now.
If they don't win this series or at least go to the playoffs, I think David Ross has to go.
I think he has to go. Wow.
I think
I just said on our Cubs podcast yesterday that I disagree, but I think there's a case. I think so.
I'm the middleman in this. Mm-hmm. Like right now, I'm not necessarily saying that I think he should be fired, but there are a lot of things he does that makes me very angry. So I think. I told Mikey the other day, I said I'm in wait-and-see mode with him right now. I don't think he gets fired, though, because I just don't think anyone is out there right now that's, like, an attractive manager as a hire.
That's my thing with it. I think, obviously, all Cubs fans are going to love him because of 2016 and stuff like that. Nostalgia kind of, like, kills it all with it. But I think from a manager standpoint, he has a lot of questions in play with, like, how he decides who's in the lineup and things like that, too. But at the end of the day, I love David Ross, no matter what, if he's on the team or not. But just, I think he has to go if they don't make the playoffs. If they make it, I give him a chance again, but it's kind of rough right now.
Cubs down 4-1 to the Braves now. The Mets and Marlins 0-0 in the fourth inning. I think that whole situation comes down to, obviously, who can win more in their last four games. And if it is a tie, the Marlins make the playoffs. The Cubs are out. Because of a series in May, they said everybody play everybody was a good idea, but then you only get one chance at a National League opponent that you're going to have to get at for a wild card spot. I think that's a bit ridiculous, but that's a story for another day. Final thoughts on that, Ben?
Yeah, I don't know. Just, I'm assuming we'll be talking playoff baseball when we're back here next week. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I would have said it before the Braves took a 4-1 lead, but I've been pretty set on all day that it's going to be a tall task for the Cubs to make the playoffs at this point. They've kind of
giving it away to their opponents.
My only hope is that the Brewers playing for nothing now. Maybe they'll just kind of lay down and die in the last week. But either way, a loss tonight is not good if they don't finish out this game with a win.
To paraphrase from the Waterboy, last games of the year, can't hold anything back now.
Love it. Did you have that saved up?
No, I just remember that because he said it like 7 times throughout the game of the Bourbon Bowl. When Bobby Boucher came back at halftime and the Mud Dogs won.
This is what I get for having bad clock management. The quarterback of the Red Zone. We get an end of the show in a football segment. We're talking about our Cubs woes, all depressed, and then Braden quotes the Mud Dogs and the Bourbon Bowl in Waterboy. Julian, thanks for being on the show today as we wrap this one up. We will be back next week for lots of talk about the MLB postseason, as Ben mentioned, more football talk.
This has been Red Zone.
Robinson with an out, drives inside, going to find Mary Clapton for her first three of the day, and it's good.
Curry owned the league last year, for sure. Personal awards and numbers.
We'll take off with you next Thursday at 6. For now, you can listen to any past broadcasts on WZND.com. Touchdown in 3, 2, 1.
Agree, I've got fun.